Michael Graham, New Hampshire Journal, has a couple of articles out this morning, NHJournal.com. More Democrats, big names actually, lining up to run for the seat that Ann Custer's held for about 12 years. Michael, take it away.
Well, Jack, first of all, your debt thing is right on. I would urge people, go to NHJournal.com and read the Shaheen piece we have about a spending boondoggle up in Franklin, New Hampshire. Now, everyone loves Franklin. Everyone loves, you know, its communities. But it was an idea for a whitewater rafting kayaking thing that the local voters shot down because they didn't want to pay for it because it was too much spending. They said, screw that. And Shaheen calls the mayor and says, hey, how about if I just give you $2.5 million free dollars? Well, as you point out, Jack, it's not free. And so that's how it keeps going, is as people keep log rolling the money and everyone's happy to have someone else's money. And they never go, oh, wait a minute. Eventually, whether it's a kayaking farm in New Hampshire or it's whatever, a snail farm in California, we all have to pay. So you're right about the debt. I don't know that it'll be a hot issue in the Democratic primary in the second CD, but they're going to have one. State Senator Becky Whitley, who's very popular with progressives, announced that she is definitely going to, formed an exploratory committee, and we've been reporting for a while that she was very likely to get in. That means that Colin Van Ostern is going to have a competitor. He's obviously the choice of Annie Custer, the congresswoman, you know, set him up, gave him advance notice. That's why he was able to come out with an almost immediate announcement of his candidacy, and he was able to have announced more than $300,000 raised, even though he just announced a week ago. So that is going to be a real primary. And the question now, Jack, is whether someone else will get in, and will it be an establishment Concord-approved Hassan Shaheen candidate like CVO who will take votes from him, or will it be another progressive, maybe someone even more progressive than Becky Whitley, who will take votes from her? If it stays a one-on-one race, you will have the first clear left wing of the party versus center of the party primary for the Democrats since NH Journal's been an operative.
Do you think a Republican can win that district regardless who the Democrat nominee is?
No, and NHJournal.com readers know that they can't. We've shown the math. The seat has been Custer's won by an average of 9 points since she first won it. She's won it by an average of 10 points since 2016. Remember, Jack, the whole universe changed on 2016. Every election from 2018 on has been totally different because of Trump. In 2016, people didn't know who Trump was. A lot of voters treated him like a traditional, you know, hey, I'm a Republican, he's a Republican, that's fine with me. Obviously, it's changed since then. Joe Biden won the second CD by 10 points, and that was before January 6th. That was before the election denial stuff, blah, blah, blah. So it would take a bizarre turn of events for New Hampshire's second district to be a competitive district for Republicans.
Who was the I think he was from Nashua. I just remember he had been in the services last night. Was it Negron? Negron? I can't remember. There was a candidate.
Steve Negron. Yeah, Steve Negron ran before.
Didn't he?
You know, twice
didn't he?
And lost
didn't he do better times? Than 9%? Didn't he do pretty well one year or not? Okay.
No, 12%, 12 points. No, there was one freak year with I'm going to space his name, Jim. Shoot, but basically he kind of snuck in on the radar. It was 2014. It was a good Republican year. I think. Oh, 2016. 2016. And he got within like 5 points.
But wow, Michael Graham not being able to put up one factoid. Unbelievable. Is that what this feels?
I apologize, Jack. I failed you. I will commit harikiri after the show is over. But there's going to be a primary.
Is that what this
Bob
feels
Burns
like?
Is almost certain. Bob Burns is almost certain to get in. Vikram Manchamani's name continues to be floated around. There's a businessman, William Hamlin, who is almost certain to get in. And, of course, you've already got Lily Tang Williams. And I'm not going to mention – there's four other people, but they've never – their filings don't include more than $1,000 of money raised. And so if you're not raising $1,000, you're just not a serious candidate. So I'll skip them. But that's how that looks.
Wait, J-Dog, this is – hold on. This is what it feels like to be able to – not correct, but add to the great Michael Graham, Jim Lawrence.
Lawrence, yes. Thank you. And by the way, that's one reason why he got so close to Custer that year. No one knew he was running. He was game. He didn't cause any trouble, and so it just voted. But what's happened since 2016, New Hampshire was already unfriendly territory for federal Republicans. But now it is basically It would take a freak accident for Republicans to win any federal elections, president, Senate, yeah. Congress. We're just not in that business. It's just like South Carolina. In South Carolina, it's very difficult for a Democrat to win a it happens every once in a while, you know, weird year pop up. But just that's just where we are. America is more polarized, more divided. The great sort has sent more. You know, why is southern New Hampshire so red? Because so many Massachusetts residents have fled across the border. One more thing, Jack. What do you think of the Democrat strategy here in New Hampshire to just pretend Massachusetts doesn't exist? There is no immigration problem. There is no crime problem. Their tax policies, we're going to pretend they're not there. What do you think of that strategy?
I don't know who the Republican nominee is going to be for governor, whether it's Kelly Ayotte or Chuck Morris, but her line, if Ayotte is successful, we're one election away from Massachusetts. If she hammers that, they're not going to be able to ignore the fact that Mass is something we've got to be, you know, deal with.
And one question I hope that you'll ask Cindy Warmington or George Craigman on the show next is, we just have the new numbers. New Hampshire has the second lowest tax burden in the country. It's actually the lowest because Alaska is a weird state. They get that oil, you know, they basically pay people to live there, so it kind of doesn't count. So among normal states, we're the lowest tax burden, the best return on investment, the lowest, one of the lowest crime rates, and the lowest poverty rates. And Joyce Craig and Cindy Warmington, by definition, are running on it's time for a change. That's just how it works. You're the outside party. It's time for a change. I'd be curious to know, what is it they want to change about our current fiscal policy?
Well, I think you could
see
a repeat.
We're already number one. Well, what do you want to change?
I think a good question. Michael Graham, New Hampshire. I think you could see a repeat this fall. But the wild card is going to be the presidential race. And if there's a seesaw year with independents, that can skew everything. But I think you could see, as you said, tough for Republicans to win those federal seats in Congress. Democrats do well in New Hampshire. But independent voters like Republican fiscal control at the State House, to your point, on lower taxes. Mm-hmm. And I think you could see a situation where, you know, the State House stays largely, you know, sort of the same. Republican role, even though Sununu's not in there. But anyway. All right. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Mr. Jackman, good morning.
Good morning to you, too, and glad to be part of the federally mandated brain break from all the political stuff.
There you go. Hey, I was talking to someone earlier this morning when I got your email this morning, talking about the career and the opportunity in the trades at the Preferred Building Systems, which is a modular home manufacturer that you guys operate and own in Claremont. And it's actually a great opportunity for people because I think there's more housing available in that part of the state for younger families to move there. But it's part of La Valley Building Supply, and your plant, along with your sister company, New England Homes, is booming, growing like a weed, no pun intended. You have great benefits in trade, but what a wonderful, and I think the story of how that modular home sort of subsidiary has just grown, starting off with different kind of products, you know, environmentally controlled building. This is a great opportunity, and you're looking for more than a few good people. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning to you, too. Yeah, at the present time, and what I sent you over was I queried Randy Williams, who's the general manager of Preferred Building Systems, and I asked him what his staffing level was right now, because we did just get a young man out of the vocational school right in Claremont, and he joined the team. But we're at a staffing level of 44 people at the plant, and we consider full staffing for a busy season, which this one is gearing up to be. We consider that to be 55 people. So we're looking at 10 to 12 opportunities for, and I hate to call them jobs, it's an opportunity for a career and a vocation. Yeah. And they're hiring plant workers. They did just hire a new designer because we can't keep up with the stuff we got. So it's a growing field.
Can I just read part of one of your releases on what you're looking for? Because then you can elaborate, Bob Jackman. I just think this is great. So in the modular home division, looking for help in production on the production floor, all areas, so electricians, plumbers, where no license is required on that. Carpenters, drywallers, roofers, insulators, and painters. So pretty much a lot of the trades covered right there, correct?
That's absolutely right. And when we say no license required, it's because we subject ourselves to third-party inspections. So we are not saying that we conform. we are having someone else certify that we meet all the codes and mm-hmm. everything. And in fact, we consider building to code as a, let's say, call a substandard. You know, we don't want to build down there. We want to build the most energy efficient home in New England.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, but again, the opportunity, and you pointed, this isn't just a, what I was saying to someone this morning, Bob, when I got your note, I haven't looked, because I know we have an affordable housing crisis, not enough inventory. We just had Rory O'Neill on the other day, Bob, one of our national NBC correspondents, looking at just New Hampshire and what an average down payment for a couple looking to buy a home in Rockingham County, for example, $130,000 now, and higher interest rates. But if you, I'm not saying anything that dramatic, but Claremont Newport has some pockets where you might be able to get a home 60% of what it might cost in Dover or Portsmouth. So if you're looking to move and you can get a job, you know, as you said, a career going in your Maggio home division, you might be able to afford a home in an area where you got skiing up the road for the family if you want to ski in the winter, lakes, ponds, fishing, great small towns, entertainment. They've done a lot in Newport to revive the area, as you know. So there's, I just think it's a part of the state that is under-marketed, if you will.
Well, and we certainly do have a lot of rural areas. You go 15 miles from Claremont, excuse me, and you're really out in the boondocks. And that's beautiful, all country living. And, yes, there are homes out there that you can pick up for considerably less than normal. And there's also opportunities. And one of the reasons our modular division just opened up what's called the Solo Series mm-hmm. is looking toward the ADU market, or if someone's got a piece of land, let's say in Leinster or one of the towns surrounding Claremont, and they want to put two or three of these ADU-type structures on it, and I'm downgrading it because it's like an ADU on steroids.
What's an ADU?
So what it is, it's a one-box modular home. It is just under 14 feet by 38 feet, so it's significantly bigger than most of the tiny homes you see, and it's designed as a one-bedroom home with a full bath and a kitchen and a living, a central living space. And they get the heating figured out. They get everything figured out. And if you know the history of our company since 1962, we've always been looking toward finding the lowest in-place cost and the best value.
And can I stop you there? Because this intrigues me. This market that you're in, these ADUs, what's the square footage roughly again?
526 square feet.
Okay, but you look at what people are looking for, simpler, and that's the whole phenomenon, the so-called tiny home market. You know, this could be a primary residence, or someone could get some land, as you said, in any part of our New England region, and maybe use it as a weekend home or a second home, and this is a great option. I'm just curious, Bob, and you may not want to do it because it depends on what people order, what the extras are. It's like asking the price of a vehicle. Well, it depends on what, you know, what package you get. But roughly, give, you know, ballpark within $10,000. Is there an average price for these that you can tell us?
I wouldn't share that. If you want to know that, then the best thing to do is to contact PBS or New England Homes, and they can give you that information. One of the things that
but certainly you'd agree with me, more affordable than maybe, you know, excavating and starting building stick built on a property. I mean, these are built factory controlled environment. I imagine that if you work with your folks, you order it, you look at it, and delivery, the whole thing. I mean, it's probably a great process to go through, correct?
It is an awesome process. And I got to take you back about 30 or 40 years. When I moved to the area a little more than that ago, a very, very popular thing to do was to buy a two-story garage mm-hmm. and build a temporary living quarters upstairs.
Right.
Until you could afford to build the house you wanted.
Right.
So you buy a piece of land, which is not as expensive as a home, and then you put a garage with some living space above,
yeah.
and then you build into that home. Well, you can do it now with a tiny home. or solo series, and that is a much better start because when you're done, you have one of the most energy efficient small houses that you can either rent out, and I'm attending an Upper Valley breakfast here in a little while, and a gentleman last year was telling us that he bought a house in Thetford, but the only way they could afford it was to put an ADU on there. So he put a tiny house on there, and he rents it out.
Mm-hmm.
And those people help him with the mortgage.
Yep.
So,
In fact, we just got a note, Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
One of the things that the modular people or off-site construction, because modular has a bad connotation for anybody over 50, one of the things they're going to ask you to do is to attend an open house. And we do have an open house coming up a week from Saturday, April 13th, from 10 to noon. And Randy has guaranteed that there will not be a snowstorm. But you do need to call ahead and reserve a spot. But you won't buy a modular home or an off-site construction home unless you see the process.
Yeah.
And when you see the process, you'll just shake your head and you go, wow, what a fantastic idea.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I love the simplicity. Sometimes less is more. We had a listener towards Loudoun check in, and she said that she and her husband have one of these on their property. They do use it, and also for rental, like you said. And she said that was, she thinks it was one of yours, but she bought it from another owner. They had it delivered and put on their land, and I think she said it was under $50,000. So that's, for some people, that's a vehicle today. You know, I mean, so it. I'm not saying that's the starting price for you. I'm just saying they were able to get it for under $50,000, she said.
Yeah, well, one of the situations you got with quoting a price is in a modular situation, let's say one of these solo series homes, which one of them is a Sunapee, the price you're quoting is not a material price. It is everything except for setting it on the land. So everything is included, your kitchen, your flooring. Everything is already in the house.
Good stuff. All right. Love it, Bob. Again, to learn more on this division, best way and how is?
Best way, really, in this world, is to go onto our website, www.lavalleys.com or www.preferredbuildings.com.
Awesome.
And you scroll down and you'll see big banner there for solo series. And just click on it. And take a walk through,
awesome.
And that'll give you an idea of a starting point in modular. And, of course, they can build absolutely anything you want.
Love it. The biggest
one we've done so far, I think, is 38 boxes.
Wow.
So a box is basically 14 by 38.
Love it. All right, Bob, thank you very much. Bob Jackman, LaValle Middleton Building Supply. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Have a great day.
This is where the Granite State comes to talk. This is the Pulse of New Hampshire. Good Morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
Great time for an update from our friends at the Manchester VA, and want to remind you that you can join the VA if you're a veteran and your caregiver, veterans, your families. The VA Manchester Veteran Wellness Center open house and ribbon cutting at Brady Sullivan Tower, downtown Manchester, April 5th. So that's coming up, of course, a couple days. So details, you can check it out. Maybe our guest now, I believe the executive director of the VA here, Kevin Forrest, joining us, our Manchester VA. Good morning.
Good morning, Jack. Yeah, we are excited to cut the ribbon on that this Friday. And so for all veterans out there, if you'd like to come join us at 8 o'clock in the morning down on Elm Street at the Brady Sullivan Tower on the second floor, really excited to showcase our new wellness center. So before we get into the show, though, Jack, I just wanted to put a call out to everybody. You know, you mentioned the impending nor'easter, which we don't really like to see in April, but hey, we live in New England. But we are open for business in all clinics tomorrow, and so I just want folks to know. But hey, if veterans have trouble getting in for whatever reason, you know, they could help us by calling our call center at 603-624-4366, and it's extension 3199. But if they need to cancel an appointment or something like that, we can help manage like we do through every snowstorm. But it takes a team here when we deal with these weather events.
Kevin, thank you. Just on the open house, talk about the Wellness Center at the Brady Sullivan. What is there? What is the Wellness Center?
So we have, you know, supporting our whole health program, there's yoga studios, Tai Chi, a gym with whole health coaches. I think I mentioned a couple shows ago, Jack, I walked through there and it looks like the New England Patriots training room. It is just a wonderful, set up there with spin bikes and Peloton bikes and all kinds of different things. So state of the art, really, for, helping our wellness program. And then we've got some other of our mental health teams also housed in there for our homeless veterans and other resources and programs. So really excited about it.
All right, what else do you have for us, Kevin? Take it away.
Well, we're, I think, in a groundbreaking mode here and doing a lot of things and opening up new facilities. So the other thing we've got coming up towards the end of the month in April is a groundbreaking for our new Women Veteran Clinic. And this is something we've been planning for some time. And today I have Laura Case, our Women Veteran Program Manager, here to share a little more details about the program and that groundbreaking with the veterans today. So I'll turn it over to Laura.
Hi, Jack. Thanks for having me. So we're super excited to be here for the groundbreaking. So April 24th from 9 to 10 a.m., all public are welcome. We are excited to start the process to build a new expansion for our women's health clinic that will have direct access. As soon as you walk into our mountain entrance, veterans will be able to access the clinic before going into the rest of the facility, which really provides that extra layer of privacy for our female veterans. It is a expansion, so we're getting consult rooms for our specialty, our social work, our mental health, to be able to be co-located with us, more exam rooms, procedure rooms. So our new staff gynecologist has a space specifically for her. The waiting room will have a children's alcove, a lactation space, and also some group space for our female veterans. So, yes, we're very excited.
That's huge.
It's due to open, yes, in fall of 2025. So we're ready for this.
And, Laura, will that be right in the main medical facility in Manchester?
Yes, it will.
Awesome. And you must be excited. That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. We're very excited. It really will open up a new access for our female veterans that is something that they have been asking for and wanting for a very long time. So we're happy to be able to meet that need, expand services, and be able to offer them services in that one location.
And I think, Kevin and Laura, that the trends and the data shows is more and more women who are coming through as military service and becoming veterans in our community and state, correct?
Yes, they absolutely are. They're the highest minority group that is joining the military today. So their numbers continue to soar, and
awesome.
We want to be here for them when they're ready to return to us.
Jack, go ahead, Kevin.
One of the things we wanted to do here is, this is really special, and so we've got a team together that will be reaching out to the veteran community here this year for the naming of that clinic. And so really excited to be able to engage our women veterans and our veteran population at large on naming this clinic after, a veteran that's special to us with ties to New Hampshire. So we think that's unique, and we haven't done that here before.
Awesome. Well, thank you both very much, Laura, Kevin, and, of course, a bunch of things opening, including this Friday, Brady Sullivan, second floor of the Wellness Center. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. And everybody have a safe snowstorm here and travel safe.
A little nor'easter. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Laura. Aaron Rial, we can confirm that. Mm-hmm. NBC News Radio national correspondent, talking about tax season. And, of course, I don't know about you, Aaron, in the last week, I've got more scams, more emails, more stuff, more whatever, whether it's text or emailed. I just delete. But take it away, Aaron.
Yes, you are doing the right thing, Jack. Just straight to the spam box, straight to the delete. Frankly, they are getting out of control. Last year, the IRS received over 290,000 complaints of identity theft. It would cost taxpayers over $5.5 billion in tax fraud. The criminal investigation from the agents of the IRS are ongoing. But what they say, and this is the best way to prepare yourself, and you did it right, the IRS will never email, text, or call you. And if any unknown company emails, texts, or calls you offering to assist with your tax returns, get you big savings, big refunds, be weary. What they're looking for is your taxpayer ID or your social, and they want to, sometimes they say they're just going to set up an account with IRS.gov. It's very confusing. No, it's not. You can handle it. I guarantee everyone listening can handle it. You just don't let them do that. They want, again, these taxpayer identification number and social, because with that, they can file a fraudulent return, or they can open a credit card account. They can get loans in your name. They essentially steal your identity, and that is thousands upon thousands of dollars and countless hours of your time trying to reclaim.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I some of these are actually very very good. I don't mean to say that. Whoever these scammers are, not necessarily the tax stuff, but like the Amazon shipping package or GoDaddy or Geek Squad renewal for $4.95 for your software package or whatever, and you're like, I don't have that. And then they'll say, just click here to learn more or to confirm or deny, you know, whatever, accept. And you're like, okay. And then financial stuff that looks like it's from your bank or credit card, and it is not. If you have any doubts, if it's real, they're going to get a hold of you. If you have any doubts, just delete it. Do not open it. Don't call anyone. And the last thing is, don't send any money to anyone. I mean, it's not how it works.
You're 100% correct. And just delete, delete, delete. Send it to voicemail if it comes through. Just don't engage. They stop. They move on to the next victim. And then if you don't engage, you won't become a victim. And then beyond that, they often use urgency and fear, which is why they're so successful, because when we feel rushed and fearful, we make bad decisions. So just take a beat. Know that the only way the IRS is getting in contact with you is a certified letter in the mail. And if you get one, sit up, because that one's real. It's not the end of the world, but just know that that's how they're contacting you, not any other way.
All right, Aaron Rial, thank you. Darby Field Advisors, one of our great partners and political analysts and all-stars out there. Bipartisan, great public affairs firm. Matthew is watching a bunch of things, including the names, which have connections to the Biden White House, showing up in New Hampshire now, as well as state senators forming exploratory committees on the Democrat side, because I think Democrats are smelling the opportunity to win a seat where they may have the upper hand that Ann Custer is retiring from, as well as the presidential stuff. Good morning, Matthew.
Hey, good morning, Jack. You're right. CD2, that's where I'm from, born and raised in Nashua. But right now it's the talk of the town here in D.C. Just had the Easter egg roll, and State Senator Becky Whitley was there, as well as Kayla Montgomery and Mackie Goodlander. And all three are rumored to be looking at New Hampshire CD2, the retiring seat from Annie Custer. And I think, as Michael Graham just said, the feeling is Colin Van Ostern was either tipped off or they're trying to pave the runway for him to kind of land the plane and take over the seat. But as you know, this is very disruptive times. Neil Levesque has said, you know, Becky Whitley is a progressive senator who might be well-positioned. Kayla Montgomery on the issue of, you know, abortion and Planned Parenthood has been outspoken. But the name that really jumped out to me was Mackie Goodlander. She's from Nashua, and most people know her mother. Her mother is Betty Tamposi. So I'm from Nashua. Tamposi, I think he pretty much developed the entire state, if not the town. Her grandfather, Sam Tamposi, I think he's still alive, maybe, part owner of the Red Sox, was also a Republican, New Hampshire Republican Party chairman.
I don't think he is, but that's okay. But everything else you're saying, he was a real titan, you know, a real leader in the Southern Tier, and a big political, everything you're saying on the Red Sox, you name it, you're right, in Nashua with Sam Tamposi.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I was kind of growing up, but this is back in the day when, like, the Bush family, the Sununu family, the Tamposi family, these, you know, all power players. My understanding is Betty Tamposi, Maggie's mother, ran for Congress in, like, 1988.
I remember.
And I think, you know, as a Republican, and some people were like, you know what, she's got young kids. I don't think that's well-suited for Congress. Well, thank God times have changed. She did not win.
She went on to the State Department, didn't she?
Exactly. But when her, when George H.W. Bush in 1988 took over, you know, won the presidency, she became an assistant secretary at the State Department. I worked at the State Department. She worked on visa issues. And then there was a very significant controversy in 1992. There were rumors around Bill Clinton dodging the draft. While he was at Georgetown, there were conspiracy theories that he went to Russia and did a visit there. I believe it was all debunked, but here's the deal. Betty Tamposi was either directed or took the initiative to go and pull all of his visas. And this became a very big weaponization of government in the political realm. And Bill Clinton would tee off on this and say, you know, this is a bunch of crazy nonsense. And when I heard it, it was the first time, you know, I've heard of government employees ever working. So he really went off on her. Betty Tamposi became the fall person. I think Acting Secretary of State Lawrence Eagleburger fired her. So again, massive issue in campaign.
This could be like this could be a Netflix documentary or investigative
conspiracy
theory.
Yeah. So now, Betty Tamposi, from Nashua, fired, leaves the State Department. In recent years, becomes like a Republicans for Lynch. Comes out swinging against Donald Trump in 2016, as well as 2020. But her daughter, who's a Navy reservist, I believe, who's worked in Democratic circles
for a long time. Not to halt you, Matthew Bartlett, Darby Field Advisors. Her husband, she's married to the National Security Advisor from Portsmouth, or they have a home in Portsmouth, I believe, Jake Sullivan. For the Biden administration, I would think that in a re-election year, the White House or Biden re-election team isn't too thrilled about this.
Well, listen, unclear, because, you know, again, Betty Tamposi going, you know, picking a big fight with Bill Clinton in 1992. Flash forward, her daughter's wedding. Who comes? Hillary Clinton. Jake Sullivan, who Maggie married, is, you know, a longtime Shaheen, Klobuchar, Hillary, now Biden's national security advisor. Like you said, the two of them are a power couple in D.C. and even maybe in New Hampshire, live in Newcastle. Maggie, again, has been a Navy reservist. She's worked in the Senate on foreign policy issues. She is now one of the top aides to Merrick Garland, and looking at that, CD2. Kind of a very interesting story. Who knows what happens? But right now, people are very much talking about, you know, Maggie from New Hampshire, and this time it ain't Maggie Hassan.
Thank you, Matthew Bart. Before I let you go, interesting stuff you've been tracking, and I have too, on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his effort to get on ballots and his campaign saying he's on the ballot in New Hampshire.
He's on the ballot in New Hampshire. Again, let's remember, this is a third-party candidacy, so where he is on the ballot is very important. Biden won New Hampshire. That could potentially be a threat, although I feel as if some of the libertarian-leaning potential voters in New Hampshire might be coming from the Republican Party. But he's also on the ballot in North Carolina, which could be detrimental to Trump, and then you're going back to Nevada. But there's a huge, huge story in the Washington Post today around RFK's presidency, which pretty much says what you've been saying pretty much the whole time. Right now, his appeal is to both parties that are sick of Trump and Biden. It is very unclear what happens. He has the potential to be, you know, one of the biggest third-party candidates, if not even bigger than Perot, who got 20%, I think, back in 1992. Mm-hmm. So huge attention there. His VP is kind of a weird one. She was supposed to be on Fox yesterday and do an interview. They pulled the plug. The VP is now saying, I work behind the scenes. It's kind of odd, but a very big story. Hard to say where it pulls from, but again, seems as if the mainstream media, Washington Post today, catching up with what you've been saying the entire time.
Thank you, Matthew. And the thing that you need to point out is, even though Kennedy will pull from everywhere, is the point of dissatisfied. The Trump block, that whether it's a 46, 48, whatever that block is, it's concrete. Biden doesn't have a concrete block, and I'll just leave it at that.
Sounds good to me, Jack. Live free or die. Talk to you soon.
Rory O'Neill, NBC Radio national correspondent. Stock market roller coaster. Take it away, Rory.
Yeah, Jack. You know, we did see the end of the first quarter last week, and all the indices were near record highs or even setting new records. And then, boy, what whiplash we've seen this week. The Dow just yesterday posting some significant losses of about 1%. Some of it is this speculation among the markets that maybe those interest rate cuts aren't coming until late this year, if at all. And that's got some investors who are jittery. Also should note, some people are also just taking profits after doing so well in the first quarter. But something to keep an eye on, as there are some conflicting data points coming from the economy that suggest those interest rate cuts may not be right around the corner.
No, they don't know. You almost sense uncertainty, more of the same through the end of the year already, even though we're in April. And I love how CNN, Rory, I don't know if you agree with me, but I don't think they fiscally or in any metaphysically, any which way, physically, spirit, could survive without Donald Trump in their news. Trump, CNN, Trump. I think Trump media is not the Truth Social or DJT. It's CNN. Every minute, every story, Trump. And they've been focusing on his Truth, his social media stock that went public on NASDAQ. And every time it drops, the story's right there. Trump's social media stock dropping. I mean, the fixation's hilarious, speaking of the stock market. Anyway.
And it's boring, Jack. It's boring. I think that's the bigger offense.
All right. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent.
Thanks, Jack.
All right. Maggie Pritchard with the Lakes Region Mental Health Centers. And they do so much great work on the mental health side. Always an important update. And we were talking about this very same subject this week on Monday, actually, on the show. I just saw one of those ads, no disrespect to the pharmaceutical giants. A woman, the office workers, they're dancing towards the camera. Take a pill for that. Take a pill for this. And that's all great and good. But we don't talk about mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide. I shared on the show Monday that a young person, just through our young friends and our wife and family, not even 30 years old, took her life just recently, living out of state. Is a depression, anxiety, and we don't talk about it. We don't talk about mental health. We don't do enough about it, and too often addiction goes hand in hand. Maggie, an update. I'm going to let you run with anything you have coming up. I know you have good stuff this spring, staffing stuff, services. I'm going to let you run with this. It's too important for me to interrupt. Take it away, Maggie.
All right, Jack. Well, today I thought we might touch a little bit on older adults because they have a pretty high rate of suicide as well, and New Hampshire ranks last among all the New England states in a scorecard for long-term services for our elderly population. And our elderly population here is growing by leaps and bounds. It's going to go from 10% to 33% by 2040. And I think we have to start paying attention to things like what was the effect of COVID on elders besides killing off a lot of people, but how about the isolation that crept into people's lives? We recognize the depression and anxiety in children, and we're giving a lot of attention and trying to be in schools and trying to help children cope with that lack, that period, that long period where they had no socialization other than through the phone and the computer and now seem to have such a hard time transitioning to real life. But we've also left behind a big part of the segment of population, our elders, who don't negotiate. I was thinking we're going to have remote services on Thursday because of the storm and how difficult it is for some elders to negotiate the computer, get online and see a doctor over the computer. I mean, right. I am grateful that we have that option, but right. not all elders can do that. And we need to start paying attention to growing those services.
And, you know, we're an aging state, an aging country, an aging region. I mean, you're right. More people are getting above 70 years old. And, you know, the other thing, Maggie, there's several things, and you're awesome, is a lot of people who get into their mid to late 70s who might still be otherwise physically healthy but maybe depressed and stressed, they tend to sometimes have survived a mate, so they're alone. Their family and immediate family may not be around them, so they're isolated in many ways. And I'm just going to say this because I said it at the time, so I'm not a Monday morning quarterback to this, because I was doing my show during the whole COVID craziness, including the remote learning that lasted way too long. But I said, and I get almost yelled at from any public health official who's on my show when I said this. I said at the time, I think the collective mental health damage, the emotional damage to half these policies that over time will be proven not to have done a damn thing, is going to outweigh the actual physical threat of a virus. And everyone said I was nuts. I get yelled at. And it's not about me being right. But I absolutely was right that the collective damage to younger people, talk to any college health folks, those infirmaries are swamped and flooded with kids coming in with emotional stress, anxiety, depression through the roof, not strep throat, not mononucleosis, not the flu. And a lot of it was created from the at-home, you know, remote learning that lasted way too long. So seniors went through this. You're absolutely right. Mental health, number one health threat facing our nation and our state and our country.
Yeah, I think about, I happen to have a stepmom who turned 90, and I'm going to her birthday party out in Buffalo this weekend. And she says to me, Maggie, I wish somebody would hire me to do a job. Now, she's a very healthy, elderly person. she still drives, but nobody's going to give her a job. But she says, I'm so isolated at home. She doesn't know how to work a computer. She doesn't have access to a lot of family around. We're going to get a snowstorm. There's not kids with a shovel like in my day where you would walk down the street and volunteer to shovel the sidewalk for your elderly neighbor. That just doesn't happen anymore, right?
No, it's so funny.
Forgotten.
It's so funny, Maggie. I want to take a moment. You bring up your example of, who's this, your mom or who's this?
My stepmom, yeah.
Stepmom, 90. I was at a sporting goods shop the other day, one of the retailers. It might begin with D, so you can guess which one. I was just getting some workout stuff. And the general manager of the store was amazing, and he was getting near retirement age. And he walked around with me because of what I got. He wanted to get me a new one out back. And I talked to him. He's a nice person. I think his name was Dave. Tremendous, like 40 years in retail. And he's actually very afraid of retirement because he doesn't want to retire, but he's getting older, so he's in a corporate setting. So I'm sure he's almost has to go. So he's brainstorming on ways to stay active. Because I told him, I've already figured it out. You don't want to ever retire.
Nope,
this panacea never. And fantasy that it's a good thing, it's not. My friends, mm-hmm. and I'm talking like some business executives who are now getting their late 60s or 70 who've retired, are some of the more depressed people I know. And they have, it's not because they have a shortage of money in the bank. They have no mission, no purpose. They're bored. So he said something to me when you mentioned snowbanks and kids going around shoveling.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's really smart. He says, you know what I noticed? I live in kind of a semi-development outside of Manchester. A lot of homes near me. No young kids come and knock at the door for handiwork, shoveling, lawn cutting. So I'm just going to get like 10, he did his numbers, 10 regular clients in the spring and summer and fall to just cut their lawn. I'll give them a bargain, but I'll do it. I'll show up and cut it and weed whack and then do handy stuff. And he goes, I did the numbers and it'll be the best part-time, you know, take me like half a day, but I'll be engaged and working. And when I get too old to do the lawnmower stuff, hopefully I've grown enough of a business to pass it on. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to find a way to engage our elders and to be more responsive to their needs, because literally they're taking their own lives and they're depressed and they're isolated and they're anxious.
And you know what? Other than you, who's talking about this?
Well, yeah, I don't know that we have enough people at the table talking about it. I was at the legislative office building or the state house this morning doing testimony, and the guy before me was testifying on nursing home and nursing home workforce and how difficult it is and what the finances are for that business. And people got out of that business, right? Geral psych units in some of the hospitals closed, you know, and so we're not paying attention and we're not thinking collectively on how can we approach this. You know, there's got to be a way.
Well, we have to do better, because just number one is the health side. And you mentioned the numbers of people getting older. I know a great partner and sponsor of ours, AARP, does good work, great work locally on this stuff. But, you know, it's interesting, Maggie. I've turned on a few people to when the Boston Bruins aren't on, or I'm not watching like an espionage type good guy, bad guy movie on Netflix. I love the documentaries, and there's a wonderful one on Katharine Hepburn, the actress, called Kate, Call Me Kate.
Mm-hmm.
And as famous as she became, and she paid a price for it, but she wanted fame, and she was very honest. She lived to be like 94, so you mentioned your stepmom. And
yep.
She said at the end, even though she was well-known and she was alone, just how hard it was surviving as she got older with no purpose. She almost was tempted to like just go down to the local grocery store and bag, but she was Katharine Hepburn. And she kind of was just talking about that, how you need to stay involved, you need to stay engaged, and you got to find something to do. And how many times is that true?
Well, absolutely. My stepmom started volunteering at like a soup kitchen homeless place. But again, they only have her passing out snacks, and she wants to be more involved. Like, can I cook, Maggie? Why won't they let me cook? Why can't I have more purpose than passing out the snack bags? And I don't want to volunteer at a nursing home because I don't want to be reminded of what's in store for me, right? I
don't
need
blame
to
her.
Do something different.
I would love to meet her. She sounds like a pistol. If you ever call me, I would love to tell her to start. Tell her to say, this guy, I'm on the show in New Hampshire, Jack. He says you should start your own business. Figure out how to start your own business. But anyway, listen, Thank you, Maggie. Best way people want to learn more is how?
Contact us at lrmhc.org or on Facebook. Follow us there.
All right. Thank you, Maggie Pritchard. I appreciate it. They do awesome stuff.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right. This is an exciting upper. Of course, Nor'easter tomorrow. Think golf, right? And opening in Bedford, I believe on Friday, is the X-Golf franchise. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's a pretty cool thing. And I believe we have one of the principals, Troy Cray, joining us with a quick update on what to expect on Friday and what's there. What are the Sims? What do they have? And where are they? Website, location, the who, what, when, where. Troy, thanks for being with us. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of an H.
Jack, thanks for having me. How are you?
Good. Well, you know, you can relieve your stress and go into a sim and hit some golf balls. I'm doing a radio show, but you know what? This is okay. Tell us about the your location and your opening.
Yeah, we're excited. We'll be the first X-Golf in New Hampshire. There's over 100 locations in the U.S. It's a huge luxury kind of thing. It's definitely like the Cadillac of golf simulators. You press a button, it automatically tees it up for you. You pick your desired height every time it's your turn. It just does that every time. You're not chasing the ball. You're not bending over. It's like a luxury, like I said.
I like to know the stories behind entrepreneurs. Tell me how this came about, you, your background, and where it's located.
So we're in Bedford, New Hampshire. X-Golf actually started in Korea. It's a little different. The lasers are pointing straight down, so short game and everything is just way more realistic, just super easy to play on.
And, Troy, where is it going to be in Bedford?
5 Colby Court.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's in a plaza. It's across the street from T-Bones.
Yep. I remember the area. What's your story, Troy? How did you come about this, your background, and best of luck to you? I think it's going to be exciting and do great.
Thank you. I've been a golf professional in the area. I was at Stonebridge for a while. One of my best friends is one of the owners. He brought the opportunity to me, and I'm excited. I'm excited to be open up Friday.
Okay, now tell us how many... Because I know on the Seacoast, a place that's pretty cool called Tor, and, you know, they have X number of the Sims, and they have leagues and people. How many? And you're open Friday. Do you do memberships, pay per time, reservations, website, all that?
Pay per time. We have 8 bays. 2 of them are actually private. We're looking forward to hosting some functions, whether it be a birthday party or maybe some small businesses want to come in and check out our private bays. We do plan on having leagues, probably when it's more towards our season. I mean, mm-hmm. You would think that season after the big snowstorm coming in, but next winter we definitely plan on having leagues. Over the summer, we're probably going to do a couple junior camps, things like that, try to be helpful for the community. I think we're going to have a Ryder Cup. We're going to have Bedford Police against Bedford Fire Department. We're just really excited to host some unique events.
X-Golf. Hey, Troy, real quick, we just... The price, I mean, if a couple buddies want to get a foursome per individual, 18, what are we talking?
Yeah, so it's actually tiered. It's bay by the hour price.
Okay.
Before noon, Monday through Thursday, is going to be $55 an hour. Afternoon, $65 an hour.
And that's one question. Hold on, because is that a total? If you have 4 people, you're splitting that $60 an hour. How does that work?
Yes, that's how it works. So you just pay for the bay, whether it's 2 of you, whether it's 4 of you. Typically, 4 of you can play in 3 hours. You're not chasing the ball into the woods, you know, and you're not teeing it up. You're not driving to each shot, so you should be able to play in 3 hours.
And that's not bad if you look at, you know, a foursome in that 55-60. That's not bad at all for the experience, plus 3 hours. And you're having your time with buddies. And what about, are you going to do any of the amenities like food, beverage, and things like that?
Yes, we have a full bar and pub menu, the sports bar, every TV. Every bay, excuse me,
awesome.
Has a TV there.
Awesome.
So you can watch your March Madness and play some golf, tee it up.
Troy, I think you're going to kill. You're going to do great. All right, if people want to learn more, again, the opening, the address, website, take it away, Troy.
Yeah, again, 5 Colby Court, Bedford. Our website is playxgolf.com. The tee times will be live at around noon to 1 o'clock today, or you can book 2 weeks in advance. And, yeah, we hope to see you. Come check us out.
You're going to do great, Troy. I'd love to get in there. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of an H across our listening region, right up into Portland, Maine. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jack.